Good afternoon and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast. I'm your host, Terrence Biggs. With me, of course, like I mentioned, one of the best content creators out there as far as being able not just to create content, but actually know what he speaks of and actually be able to articulate it clearly. Your guy in mind, Ryan Holmes. Good afternoon, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just glad the Raiders are 3-0 and can't wait for Monday night. I will be in attendance at SoFi. And the Raiders vacation home, trying to get that extra home game.
Now, before the season started, I thought you said that they would win 11, right?
I think I predicted 10.
I had them at 9. I think that your 10 is looking good. Like, if they can pile wins now, those will pay dividends later. Now, I want to kind of flash back and forth between the Miami game and kind of preview the Chargers game. One of the things I want to talk about in the Miami game is this. I am stunned at just seeing how Bryan Edwards is coming along. Do you think this is going to be a year-long pattern of Carr will find him in key situations, or do you think that it's just more of like a matchup because of the teams they face?
Well, clearly Carr's getting trust in him. You saw him do a hand motion there when they're around midfield, tried to throw a fade route to him down the sideline when he got a certain coverage. But Carr clearly trusts him at this point. He's given him chances. Even that ball he threw in overtime, the deep ball over the middle, he was bracketed. He was double covered. He was like the only receiver in that play that was double covered. But I think Carr is going to lean on him a little bit here. Teams clearly are rolling coverages towards Waller. They're respecting Ruggs a little bit more. So when you need a big play, Edwards is going to be in man coverage one-on-one more often than he is not. And he's got the size and strength to be able to go up and make plays on the ball in the air and then win on the inside. When he can get inside leverage on these defensive backs. So I still don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a 7, 8, 9 catch a game guy. I mean, we're looking about what you're going to expect in this offense because they distribute the ball so well. But, you know, 3, 4, 5 catches, a couple of big plays, occasionally get in the end zone. Unfortunately, he's found the end zone 1.5 times this year, and they both came back. So hopefully we get him in the end zone this week.
I look at it, and I'm actually excited. Like, I've been critical of Carr because, well, I've seen somebody with outstanding physical talent but not the mental dexterity and fortitude to put it all together. Now he's seen that he's putting it together. I want to look at Peyton Barber. Do we expect Peyton Barber to actually get up to speed and actually gash the Dolphins for 113 yards?
No one could have predicted that. He just walked into the facility 3 weeks ago. He was signed off the practice squad. He's bounced around the league a little bit. He was a feature back a couple of years ago with the Washington football team, but that didn't last very long. It basically came down to pass protection. Kenyon Drake missed some pass protection opportunities in the first half. Neither one of those guys was running the ball very well at halftime. Gruden stuck to it. Barber was picking up some blitzes. And then the thing I like about Barber is he's got, you know, pretty good vision. He runs with good pad level, and he finishes runs. Now, he's not going to be a guy that's going to win a foot race to the outside. He's not going to run a lot of outside zone or stretch plays with him. When he gets in the secondary, he's not running away from anyone. So, but he's going to get you 3, 4, 5 yards when it's blocked up for that, and he's going to continue to pound the ball for a couple extra yards. Now, ball security could be an issue. He did fumble down at the goal line. He did stick the ball over and luckily broke the plane right before he fumbled again. So he's going to have to clean that up, but I think Gruden trusts him. There was a chance he wasn't going to be on this. If he didn't have that game he had and Kenyon Drake was picking up blitzes a little bit better this week and got a little bit more playing time, then maybe if Jalen Richard comes back, Peyton Barber might have been going to the practice squad or been waived. So, but I think he's carved out a role as a big back that Gruden can trust if this injury to Jacobs continues to linger.
That's one of the things I appreciate and I kind of like about John Gruden. It kind of reminds me of a basketball coach where if he's trying to pick out his starters or he's picking out his rotation, maybe it's not the most skilled guy that gets in that 9-man rotation, but it might be the guy who can fight through a screen. It's the little thing. It's the minute detail. I am not a John Gruden fan, but in this case, the ability to pick up a blitz matters, and I applaud that. It's the little things. It's the things that he probably obsesses over that kind of makes his 3-0 start fantastic. What doesn't, to me, make up the 3-0 start and kind of fantastic kind of worries me? We have to talk about Andre James. What can Tom Cable do, or is it just more of, you know what, he's here, deal with it, and try to compensate?
Yeah, to me, it comes back to the snap problems. It's a little bit slow. He snaps them over his head. You can't have that, especially against teams like the Chargers or the Chiefs, where every possession matters. And it's basically you snap it over the quarterback's head. It's like a 15-yard penalty, basically. You lose a drive at that point. He was actually okay run blocking this week. It's a little bit better, but the bar is not very high based on the first two games he's played where he was bad, let's be honest. So it's getting a little bit better run blocking. It's still not great. It's still not average, but I'd say it's fringe. It's getting closer. But again, you saw the line. There was some communication issues on some blitzes. Now, Miami had exotic fronts all over in that game. They were bringing 5, 6, 7 from everywhere. They were showing cover zero and backing out. So it was tough for that young line to adjust to some of the blitzes they were seeing. But he's got to clean up the snaps. Like, at the end of the day, as a center, when you have a team that's going to be in the shotgun, you know, 50, 60% of the time that wants to throw the ball around the yard, you have to be money with your snaps. And if he doesn't clean that up, I think we might be looking at Nick Martin here in the next few weeks.
And I know that, I mean, in retrospect, I look at a guy like Quinn Meinerz, and I'm like, what could have been? But we can't lament about it. James and Martin are here. They were chosen for a reason, so we just got to just deal. Now, what do you think of the play of Jermaine? Oh, God, I'm about to butcher his name. Elaminor?
He's been solid. He's come in and given the team basically what Denzel Good did last year, kind of just come in, fill in for injuries. He's not getting penalties. He's not missing a ton of assignments. He's not an elite player by any stretch of imagination, pass blocking or run blocking, but he's serviceable. You can count on him. And for a guy that came in, again, after cutdown day, he was added to the roster after the 53. He's played about as well as you can expect a backup guy that's pressed into action to play. So he's probably – him and Colton Miller have been the two most consistent guys on the line. I do have some questions about Alex Leatherwood 3 weeks in here, you know, just watching the tape and some of the issues he has in pass blocking, because he's got Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack coming at him the next 2 weeks, and he's got a lot of things to clean up, and hopefully Cable can work with him over the next, you know, week or two and get him to be a little bit better, because if he does what he did against the Dolphins or those two guys, Carr's going to be in for a long day.
What did – when you look at the rookie, what did he do that alarmed you most about his pass blocking? What particular aspect of that game, or his game, I should say?
So he got beat, you know, pretty regularly by, I believe it was Ogba in that game, who's an average, you know, defensive end in the NFL. He's not a superstar. He's not an above-average player. But the thing to me is he's really athletic. You can see how he sets and how he moves in his lower half, but there's times where he's not getting deep enough in his set. But the biggest thing to me is his hands. For a guy that's got the length that he has, I think he had 34-inch arms, 33 5/8, something like that, and the power that he has, he carries his hands low when he's doing his set, and then by the time he brings them back up, it's too late. So his timing with his hand punch is very inconsistent. And when he's got his hands down around his waist, and you saw Ogba just come with a cross chop, he can knock that thing down and get the corner. So he's giving a short corner to some of these, you know, averages pass rushers. And we saw T.J. Watt have his way with him a little bit before he got hurt. He's got to get his hands up, and he's got to use his length and his leverage, because his lower half and his athleticism is actually pretty good. It's just all about his hand timing and his strike timing. Just isn't consistent at all from play to play. There's plays where he does it. He gets his hands up. He uses his leverage, and once he locks on a guy, he can block him. But it's just that timing issue. You see him sometimes just can't get his outside hand up quick enough. Guys knock it down, and they're out. They're around the corner, and Khalil Mack's going to eat that up, and so is Joey Bosa. So I expect to see the running back on that side a lot, Foster Moreau chipping. They're going to have to help him out for the next 2 weeks. for sure.
What was the one thing that surprised you most as far as one particular play that highlighted the offensive game plan for the Raiders that stuck out versus the Dolphins?
I don't know if it's one play in particular, but the biggest thing that I noticed is John Gruden's pretty good calling plays against man coverage. Just the different formations, how he gets in and out of his bunch formations, how he can take a bunch 3-by-1 and turn it into a 2-by-2 stack, where he can get releases for Hunter Renfrow, Henry Ruggs, Bryan Edwards, whoever's lining up in that bunch, to where teams can't get their hands on those guys. And then when you're running choice routes versus man coverage, the quarterback's seeing the same thing Renfrow's seeing, the same thing Waller's seeing, and can adjust their routes on the fly. So they're really tough to guard in man coverage, especially when all four of those guys are playing well. And you can call those same plays against zone, too, because, again, you're just reading the leverage of the defensive back, and you're just trusting that Hunter Renfrow is going to read it properly and get the right, whether it's an in route, whether it's an out route, whether he's sitting it down. There was one play in the red zone right before the touchdown to Renfrow where he did the triple quadruple move on Xavier Howard, where they had a 3-by-1. It was similar to the game winner where Zay Jones struck across the field and scored the touchdown. Zay Jones, again, was wide open against a cover zero look. They ended up dropping out of defensive linemen, so they had four guys in coverage, but it was a choice route to Renfrow. No one covered Renfrow. He was wide open, so I understand Carr, that's his read, hits him, 8-yard pickup, they score the next play, but no one covered really Jones either. So the confusion that Gruden's creating to these teams that are playing man coverage and they don't know who's covering who out of the bunch formations is, and we've seen it 3 weeks in a row, and just the way he's calling and he's mixing it up. The bunch is always different. You know, Renfrow sometimes is the number three on the inside. Sometimes he's the number one on the outside. Sometimes he's on the backside as the isolated receiver. Sometimes it's Waller. Sometimes it's Ruggs. So like these teams, with all the personnel groupings are coming in and out, have no idea who's lining up where. And then I expect to see the Raiders start to do this a little more up-tempo to really speed things up on the defense, and then they can do whatever they want on offense. And then I'm glad to see they got the running game going too, because that's going to be important this week. The Chargers have the last-ranked run defense in the league, and they played the Cowboys and Chiefs, two teams that aren't historically great at running the football. So we'll see what happens this week.
When we come back from break, I want to talk about the defense a little bit, and I kind of want to preview the Chargers game this Monday night. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast on FPC Radio Network. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, one of the players that stuck out to me on defense is Denzel Perryman. Now, for those listening who have followed the Raiders in recent years, you had Perry Riley. You had Navarro Bowman. You had – who am I missing? The guy from Wake
Kurt
Forest.
Kurt Morris back in the day.
Kurt Morris back in the day. You had guys who – has always been a stopgap at middle line – like not middle linebacker, just linebacker in general. Bowman
– Mark Kelly for a little bit.
Yeah, Mark Kelly. That's who I was looking for. Perryman just – he plays downhill. He seems like he's a fish to water for this defense. What did you see that stuck out most in the first 3 weeks about his performance?
Perryman jumps off the tape. He's physical. He's not a big dude by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not afraid to lay the wood to anybody. And I would argue that Perryman's three games so far with the Raiders were better than anything we saw during the Navarro Bowman era. How short-lived it was, 8-10 games, whatever it was, he was with the Raiders. But just instinctually, how well of a run defender Denzel Perryman is, and just anticipating where he needs to go and reading his keys, he doesn't get fooled very often at all. He did miss the tackle there on the fourth down and goal. He kind of overran Brissett, who cut it back inside of him. But, you know, other than that, when he gets there, he delivers a blow, too. It's almost like a better version of Jonathan Abram, you know, a guy that's going to lay the hammer, but he's not missing tackles. He's not missing assignments at times. And to see how those two guys feed off each other is encouraging, but Perryman's been great. I mean, I don't know why. I know he was hurt in Carolina, but you tell me they couldn't use that guy in their defense. Like he's blown my expectations away as how good he's played. And in coverage, he's been okay. He hasn't been a liability. He knows the defense. He knows the adjustments. And to my surprise last week, he played in the dime. So he was the only linebacker on the field when they went six DBs. And, you know, you figure it would be Littleton or someone with a little bit better coverage skills. But Gus Bradley, he wants Perryman on the field. He wants him calling the defenses, and he played in the dime this week.
When you mentioned Jonathan Abraham, it's funny because on that conversion play of third down, when Brissett gets loose and he shakes Abraham out of his shoes, even though he got the first down, he paid for it. Perryman laid the wood and laid him sideways, and it was a textbook hit. It was clean. There was no chance for a flagging, but that's the way he gives the defense teeth, actual workable teeth that teams might say, hey, you know, I might want to not take that quick slant right in front of his face. I might want to be careful with that stuff. I think it's been one of the most underrated signings. Now, am I wrong? Did he come into a building on September 1st?
He came in right at the trade deadline. He was like one of the last guys, or I'm sorry, right at the cutdown deadline, the end of August. And then he had a 5-day waiting period because at the time he wasn't vaccinated. So he came in like the first Wednesday practice before the season started. So, yeah, it was right around early September. So he hasn't been here very long, but he knows his defense. He was with Gus Bradley for 4 years with the Chargers.
Now, we got to talk about the Monday night game. Now, you are, as a native California, you are headed to SoFi. Now, a couple of questions before we delve into the game. Have you been there before, and what's the buzz like in Southern California about these Chargers?
Well, in my lifetime I'm 43. I've lived in Southern California for 31 of those years. I've met two Chargers fans in my entire lifetime. So I would say there's no buzz on the Chargers. You just don't hear about them. At least up in L.A., you don't. And I'm about an hour north of L.A., to be fair. So there's no real Charger fans up where I live. The buzz is more for the Raiders. You know, you run into way more Raider fans in L.A. than you do Charger fans. And I'm looking forward to the game. I have not been to SoFi yet. I've been to Allegiant twice now, but I have not been to SoFi. And I'm taking my daughter as a good luck charm because I took her to the 2016 game down in San Diego when the Raiders clinched the playoffs that year when they beat them 16-13 the week before Carr got injured. So I've taken her to one Raiders game in my life against the Chargers, and they won that game and clinched the playoff spot. So she's my good luck charm this week.
Now, looking at the game, we have a Charger team that Justin Herbert has met expectations, and what stands out to me most about his performance is the fact that he's completing almost 70% of his passes and yet still maintaining about 7.5 yards an attempt. What does that tell you about how he sees the field and what he's trying to accomplish?
Well, I believe they're throwing the ball a lot shorter than they have in the past. I watched the whole game against Kansas City to kind of get a quick preview on them. I've watched a little bit of their game against Dallas, but you don't really see Herbert really chucking it down the field unless it's a broken play. He gets outside the pocket. So he's staying within the offense. They're scheming guys open pretty quickly. He's got Keenan Allen, who's a phenomenal route runner with exceptional hands that can get open within a couple of seconds. He can hit him. He's got the big-bodied Mike Williams on the outside. They can throw some fade routes and some balls down the field. And the Jared Cook, you know, we all know who Jared Cook is when he's with the Raiders. He's a very good pass catcher, not much of a run blocker. I do have concerns about the offensive line. I do have concerns they don't run the ball very well, but Justin Herbert is phenomenal if you give him time. He's got unbelievable arm strength, really good accuracy, and he's a lot more athletic than people think. He's another guy that when he gets outside of the pocket or on third and long, the Raiders have to be prepared for him scrambling because that's given their defense fits so far as scrambling quarterbacks and getting into third and long and then giving it up when, you know, Brissett got a couple. Lamar Jackson's obviously Lamar Jackson. He's going to get some, but they have to be cognizant of Herbert pulling it down to running as well.
And people forget that for as athletic as Herbert is, he's about 6'6 and like 230 pounds. So it's not like he is like a smaller mobile quarterback. He's a big guy with athletic skills. Now, their defense, I want to talk about a couple of guys. One of the guys I want to talk about is Derwin James. Now, there's been forever talk about the Raiders selecting Colton Miller over Derwin James. In hindsight, the Colton Miller drafting looks pretty smart, does it not?
No, it does. They have a franchise left tackle. They've given him a second contract. He's under contract for another 5 seasons. Derwin James, I mean, if injuries aside, if you just lined them up next to each other, he's probably the better player, more superstar impact potential, but he's not available. He's missed a lot of time due to injury. He did in college. His body, you know, doesn't really hold up over the course of a full season. And where Colton Miller plays through injuries, he shows up every week, and he's gotten better every year. So in retrospect, you can't really say anything about that pick. The Raiders did fine with Colton Miller, and they developed him properly.
No. When we look at struggling at defense, you mentioned Bosa. I want to talk about how it seemed like San Diego, L.A. has kind of thrived off of drafting converted safeties to play linebacker. You have a guy like Kazir White. You have a Drew Tranquil. You have guys like that. What is it, do you think, about that combination along with Derwin James that makes their defense a possible headache for the Raiders?
Well, Brandon Staley, number one, the head coach, was the defensive coordinator of the number one defense in the league last year with the Rams. So he comes over there, and they're doing a lot of similar things, a lot of light boxes. They're going to let you run the ball if you want to, but they're not going to let you throw the ball down the field for big plays, and they're going to limit that. So you saw that last week. Tyreek Hill didn't really get loose deep. Mecole Hardman didn't really get loose deep, and they're going to play those two shells. They're going to play the two deep safeties. They're going to keep them there. They're going to put six in the box, and they're going to dare you to run it, which is a reason why they've given up the most rush yards in the league. The teams that are going to line up and run the ball against them are going to have success. Kansas City ran the ball well. Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 100 yards. They're giving up 100, and I think it's 86 yards to the Cowboys and Chiefs, and on the season 170, because they're one short in the box. And John Gruden, I think, is licking his chops right now to get that run game going. So the Raider fans that think that they're going to see an aerial show where Carr's going to throw for 350 yards, I think we're going to see a lot of Josh Jacobs, Peyton Barber, sprinkle in some Kenyon Drake, and the Raiders are going to try to get this run game going, because if they want to – I don't think that they're in a spot where they can drop back and try to block Joey Bosa 45 times this week. I don't think that's going to work. So run the ball, create that. It's going to open up a little bit of play action. They're not going to play a ton of man coverage, so this is going to be the first time, I think, this year where the Raiders aren't going to see a ton of man coverage, because that's basically all Baltimore and Miami did to them. Pittsburgh's kind of a mix of both. So you're going to see – I don't think you're going to see those deep shots, those YOLO balls down the field that we've seen. But this is a game where we can get back to kind of traditional what we've seen from the Raiders in the past. Line up, big personnel, run the ball, dominate. Kenneth Murray, undersized guy. Kazir White, undersized guy. Drew Tranquil, undersized guy. Ochino Owosu, undersized guy. So if the Raiders are ever going to run the ball this year, this is the week to do it.
Who's your X factor going in for this game for the Raiders? Like, what player do you think that may not get the shine or the attention heading in will have the biggest impact?
So this is an easy one for me after watching the film last week. It's not going to show up in the box score. For me, it's clearly Foster Moreau, who's been a pretty good blocker in his career. And watching the Miami game on TV from the broadcast angle, like, oh, the offensive line's not playing well, or this and that. Actually, watching the film, the offensive line fared pretty well against Miami in the run game. They're okay. Foster Moreau had a tragic game blocking. A lot of the times when the running back got blown up, it was Foster Moreau missing his block. So I don't know if he had a bad game, but he basically, Miami manhandled him in the run game, and that threw a lot of the zone runs off where they couldn't contain the backside. So if the Raiders are going to run the ball in this game, it's going to come down to Foster Moreau having a better game than he had against Miami, because he's going to be responsible for the backside on a lot of these zone runs. And when the Raiders got it going in the second half, they started running a lot of inside zone weak. So they were running the weak side away from the tight end. And that's when you saw Peyton Barber get loose a couple times. But if the Raiders are going to run the football with Josh Jacobs, if he plays this week, they are going to have to block, and the tight end is very important to do that. And you're not going to ask Waller to do it. He's serviceable, but you don't want Waller lining up in line as a blocker. You want him lined up outside to kind of dictate the coverages too. So Foster Moreau is going to have to be the Foster Moreau we know he can be, because last week he wasn't.
I would say, if I had to guess, it would be Hadarius Phylon for me, because, like you said, the Chargers don't run the ball extremely well, and they don't really have a bruiser. Austin Eckler's a a versatile back, but not the biggest guy. I think Filon will be able to possibly, you know, continue to penetrate and make it difficult to run anywhere up and down the line of scrimmage. And that's a guy that I like, Filon. Now, if you had to predict a score for this game, what would it be?
Well, I think the Raiders can go in and win this game. I think it's going to be not as high scoring as fans think. I think you're going to have a little feeling out process early where Gruden is going to try to figure out what coverages they're going to run. Can they establish the run game? Gus Bradley should know a lot about Justin Herbert, having practiced against them all last year. Bradley did a good job disguising coverages last week, whereas in the first couple of weeks, he basically showed the teams, we're going to run this, and that's what they ran post-snap. This week, they moved a lot of things around. I'm going to take the Raiders to win this game 27-24. I think it'll be close. And as much as I say that the Raiders have to block Joey Bosa, I think the Chargers are going to have a hard time blocking Max Crosby because the right tackle is not playing in this game. They're starting Storm Norton on the right side. Next to, I might butcher this name, Ode Aboshi, who used to be with the Raiders in training camp a couple years back. He's kind of a journeyman. So the right side of that Chargers line is going to be in for a nice battle this week. So I think whichever team can run the football and limit how often the right tackles have to block in this game, we're going to have the advantage.
I think if I had to predict, I would go 29-20 Raiders. This might be this, like you said, it'll be closer than what it, you know, what it will look like. I think that that field goal, that last 3 points, will come a little bit later on in the game. I see, like you said, it'll be difficult to block Max Crosby. I just see the Raiders just kind of starting to keep, you know, picking up this ground where after this week, they face a Bears team that has no identity, but they still have that sound defense, and I'm sure that number 52 is going to want to, you know, renew acquaintances. How can people interact with you on social media?
Yeah, they can hit me up on Twitter. It's at RHOLM22. And again, I'm still putting out the weekly All 22 tape when I get it. And then every once in a while, I'm getting questions sent in. So I think the listeners who are sending me those questions, I appreciate it. Just keep them coming. And I'm excited, looking forward to the Raiders' extra home game this year. This will be their 10th home game. I fully expect 80% Raider fans there this week.
Now, being in L.A. and being in the L.A. area, do you think that if you could take a poll of the fans, just in the form of poll, do you think that they wish that it would have been the Raiders in the area instead of the Chargers?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. The fans in this area, the Rams fans, no, because they didn't want the Raiders fans in their stadium knowing that they would dominate it. But clearly, the Chargers don't have a fan base much. I mean, I would assume that their season ticket fan base is mostly made up of transient and or Raider fans that want tickets for this specific game. It's going to be interesting going in there, seeing how many Chargers season ticket holders actually show up. So we'll see. Again, I expect it to be at least 75%, if not 80% Raiders fans. When I went down to San Diego in 2016, it was probably closer to 90% Raider fans. It was a home game. It was amazing to see the turnout of Raider Nation.
Ryan Holmes, as always, thank you for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
This has been an episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.